Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Fridays are all about food here at WAMC. Food we make, food we serve, food we eat. Now, not everyone eats the same way. Some folks don't eat meat. Vegetarians, we call them. They thrive on a diet of fruits, veggies, grains, and more. It may seem limiting to the average carnivore, but the possibilities are endless, delicious, and nutritious. And we have some fantastic folks in studio with us today who can tell you a few things about the vegetarian diet and cuisine. Jennifer Stack is a registered dietitian, certified diabetes educator, professionally trained chef, and a professor at the Culinary Institute of America. She's a vegetable expert. She can tell you about how to maximize the nutritional value of a vegetarian diet and is full of great tips about cooking veggies and food safety. Also the author of Diabetes Friendly Kitchen, 125 recipes for creating healthy meals. Also with us today, Chef Rick Orlando, chef owner of New World Home Cooking Company in Saugerties, New York, and chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany, which has won awards for its vegetarian offerings, along with eating at its restaurants. You may have seen him on TV. He was on the Food Network's Chopped program. I think you won that, didn't you, Rick?
A couple of times there.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, all right. Yeah. And, of course, a PBS program, and that's the Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And you've read the book, which is We Want Clean Food. That's correct. So I've got all that underway. Hey, listen, if you want to get in touch with us, 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment at the bottom of today's show page. It's wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/wamcradio. You can tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your calls. It's a call-in show, 800-348-2551. Now, full disclosure, nobody in this room is a vegetarian.
That's correct.
That's right.
But yet you both, Jennifer and Rick, have really done amazing things with a vegetarian diet. So sell me, an unapologetic carnivore on a vegetarian diet. Jennifer, you got first crack.
Well, first of all, if it doesn't taste good, if the vegetable-based dishes don't taste good, forget it. Game's over. It's not going to work. And one of the challenges I gave to myself a number of years ago was I said, you know, if I really want to be a good chef, then let me take away my crutch of those animal-based ingredients. Let me get rid of my butter, my cream, my chicken stock, and meats, and let's see if I can make something taste really good. And in the process, I started to ask for vegan dishes. That means no animal products in them whatsoever. When I would go out to a lot of really good restaurants, not just your local vegan joint, but top-notch restaurants like Per Se and Thomas Keller's French Laundry. And when I saw what they could do without animal products, I said, whoa, this is just like another type of cuisine. For instance, we'll eat Asian cuisine, we'll try Indian cuisine, we'll try Southern cuisine. Well, you need to think of vegan eating as just another type of cuisine. Mm. There's different ingredients, different flavors, but most importantly, the vegan cuisine really can keep you healthy, and it's also so much healthier for our planet.
But you do need some of the things that are in meat, and so how do you compensate in that way?
Well, you don't have to have things that are in meat.
But you need protein, for instance.
You need protein, but you can absolutely get just as much protein from, there are three plant products that will give you the same complete protein. Anything with soybeans, so that could be edamame, that could be tofu, that could be tempeh, anything that involves quinoa, the grain quinoa, or the grain amaranth. But if you don't like those, or you don't want to have those on a regular basis, then the old process of what we call combining grains. So that classic combination of rice and beans. We've got a grain, we've got a legume, gives us all the necessary amino acids. It's a complete protein, just like your chicken, fish, or meat. But you're getting fiber when you're doing these plant proteins. And you're not getting
saturated fat. And that's great for diabetics.
That's great for people with diabetes. That's great for people who are trying to lose weight or don't want to be constipated.
Yeah, well, there you
and
go.
We don't.
And
yes,
we don't,
indeed.
That's right.
Rick, you've done amazing things with vegan and vegetarian offerings. And, you know, was it a learning curve for you to get to that point?
A little bit, I think. Not so much growing up in the world I grew up in the late 70s and 80s in the art and music underground. There were plenty of vegetarians in my life, and I was a vegetarian for about 2 years, and a lot of it was at that time was budget-based. You know, we were starving artists.
Yeah.
We went to the Indian restaurant on 6th Street because it was $4.99 for a big dish of, you know, masoor dal, and we ate chickpeas. But I think as a chef, if you limit yourself and you set boundaries on what you will and won't cook, you limit yourself. You limit your abilities. I've always been up for the challenge of creating the most delicious food I can make. Mm. And whether it's a meat-based dish or a vegetable-based dish, I don't stop until it tastes the way I want it to taste. And right. Funny, opening a restaurant in Woodstock in the 90s was a good learning curve for me because coming from Boston and New York City, there was a lot more, well, first of all, of an outspoken local base that had a lot of questions about food that drove me to dig deeper into what I was doing, not just making a delicious steak, but learning about the food I make and also developing a base of loyal customers who will eat my food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like the king of seitan. I mean, I sell tons of
right.
seitan, you
know? Seitan.
Seitan. Yeah,
right.
I am a seitan worshiper. But part of that was just an experiment, tossing it on the menu in Woodstock back in 94. And now it's one of my top five or six selling proteins consistently in both restaurants. Yeah. And we do neat things with it. But it was definitely listening to my customer base.
Yeah.
And also listening to my instincts as a creative person. It'd be like saying to an artist, I want you to make all the art you want. You can't use blue. Well, you know, I have a full palette and vegetables and grains and nuts and seeds and roots and berries are just as much of that palette as, you know, a chunk of chicken or pork or fish.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Jennifer Stack is here and Rick Orlando as well. Jennifer, in your book, you have The Fabulous 15. Tell us about The Fabulous 15.
The Fabulous 15 refers to 15 vegetables that I have selected for a number of reasons. One, from the perspective of diabetes and weight loss, they're low in carbohydrates, they're low in calories, but also because they're either really rich in antioxidants and helpful phytochemicals, or importantly, they can add a lot of flexibility to your menu, like mushrooms can do that, mm-hmm. or because they hold up really well in the refrigerator. Because
that's important. It really is.
It is. I have to tell you, the produce drawer in my refrigerator has had moments where I call it the compost bin because you have all these good intentions, but whatever happens, you don't get around to it. So I really now focus on a lot of those good root vegetables, cabbage, fennel, parsley. Lots of fresh parsley, and
they'll keep for a long time.
Yeah, it holds well. It holds well.
Amazing. Well,
the other thing is, I like to try to in that compost bin to think like Americans are really funny. We like to hoard and glom shop, I call it. And when you travel to Asia and Europe, people shop daily.
Yeah.
And they buy what they need for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that you know. And I've done presentations on this lifestyle thing where we put shopping on the list of chores where other people put shopping on the list of daily pleasures.
Don't you think that goes back maybe to the Depression when food was not as easily? Don't you think that got into our culture where people said, listen, I don't know what's going to happen next week. I want to stock up now.
Maybe. I think it goes back more to the 50s supermarket culture where there's bigger and bigger packages and frozen stuff. But the idea of shopping daily and buying what's there or shopping maybe every other day and not buying 2 weeks worth of vegetables certainly goes a long way to having fresh, delicious food because the longer that vegetable's sitting, its nutrition value begins to deplete and, you know, you're not getting the same thing anyway. So get that thing out of your head that, oh, now I got to go buy some food. It's like, ooh, now I have to go buy some food. It's like going to a record store for me. It's like, ooh, let's go flip through the bins and find something fun, you know?
Well, let's go to the phone lines here. Leroy and Rhinebeck, you're first.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I'm Hungarian, Magyar. Maybe you know that term, yes?
No, but tell me more about it.
From Budapest. Now listen here. My mother used to make me a Hungarian chicken soup.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know how to make a Hungarian chicken soup?
Uh-oh.
No.
Well, I will tell you. First, you steal a chicken.
All right. I knew he was setting us up, and every now and then he'll call us. All right, you got us. Congratulations. Now we'll go to a real call, and Margie in Olive Bridge. Margie, you're on.
Hey, Marge.
Howdy, folks. How
Hi.
Are you?
Good.
So thank you so much. I love, I'm a vegetarian. I've been vegetarian since I'm 15, and that's like 40-some-odd years ago. And so I've been doing this a long time. I actually follow a program or an eating style from Joel Fuhrman, called Nutritarian. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I've heard of the name, but I'm not that familiar with all of the components.
Yeah, me either.
Well, it's basically nutrient-dense. What you count is nutrients rather than calories.
Okay, makes sense.
You're aiming for the highest nutrient value, and so his food pyramid is actually kind of flipped. Not necessarily flipped, but it's a little different than what you expect. He advocates like about 60% of your nutrients coming from the dark green leafy vegetables and also non-green vegetables like eggplants, you know, mushrooms, that kind of thing. And actually not so much of the grains. He says, you know, maybe limit the grains a little bit. And certainly the oils and the refined sugars and all that stuff.
Okay.
And I'm just putting it out there to anybody who's interested, they might want to check out his book, Eat to Live.
There's a couple concerns, though, that come to mind. As you're talking about, one, he's limited the fat. Our scientific research really supports the idea that we want some fat in our diet and we want the healthy kinds of fats. And those
Absolutely.
Healthy fats can definitely come from some of the grain products and other vegetable-based fats. Also,
yes.
When you talk about less cutting back on the grains, as long as somebody else is getting a wide enough variety of other foods in their diet,
yes.
For instance, they've got a lot of different beans, they've got a lot of different nuts and seeds, then
yes.
We may be able to get adequate protein.
And nuts and
Absolutely.
Seeds, nuts and seeds, I think, are one of the secrets there, too.
Yes.
They're very important.
Margie, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. It is Vox Pop. It is a Food Friday. Rick Orlando is here. Jennifer Stack is here. More of your calls coming up at 800-348-2551.
WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Larry's Southwestern Sauces, locally produced Mexican cooking sauces for spicy snacks at football playoff parties, available in New York, New England, and online, LarrysSouthwesternSauces.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. And Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, taking reservations for Valentine's Day dinners, spa days, and weekend escapes on a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront estate with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant, and spa, buttermilkfallsinn.com.
Say, did you know the fun drive starts on Monday at 6 a.m.? Well, the fun drive starts Monday at 6 a.m. If you want to shorten the drive, you can make your pledge right now at WAMC.org. We call that Feeding the Lockbox. We would love you to make a pledge. The lockbox over 402,000 the last I checked. So that shortens the drive. And that means back to regular programming quicker. WAMC.org. You can make a secure online pledge right there. But if not, if you like to call in the drive, well, we like that too. And that starts on Monday at 6 a.m. It is Vox Pop. Jennifer Stack of the Culinary Institute of America, also author of the Diabetes-Friendly Kitchen, 125 Recipes for Creating Healthy Meals. Rick Orlando, who has been on this show many times before, of New World Home Cooking and the author of We Want Clean Food. We talk veggies today and vegetarian diets and interesting calls thus far, mostly. Jim in Albany. Jim, you're next.
Hey, hello, Ray.
Hey.
And Rick and Jennifer.
How are you?
All right. Hey, here's the question. How do horses get the protein they need if they just eat oats and grass?
The same way cows do.
And how's that?
Oh.
Ah.
The same way lamb do.
All right, now.
So,
it's a different process. It's a
okay.
totally different process.
You know, I heard this 30 or 40 years ago when I got into the health food deal, and I thought it would be great to go directly to the source and eat the grains and myself instead of waiting for the horses.
Yeah, and change your stomachs. It would work
yeah.
great.
Okay, all right.
So
Swap
lamb do
out.
That too, huh?
Yeah, we have a new stomach surgery coming up soon where you can add 4 or 5 extra stomachs
see,
and then you can
raise. He's making that up. Jennifer, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I'll weigh in it. I mean, not a veterinarian, but definitely 4-legged animals and ones that survive on oats and grass are different creatures than us. Our anatomy is really nothing like theirs. So I can't say why they're able to do it, but they've survived for a millennium eating that way. Humans do not, however. We would not survive.
What's different about their anatomy?
You'll have to ask a veterinarian.
Or ask a horse. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. You ever cook with grass, Rick?
Well, grasses all the time. Corn, oats, wheat, they're all grasses, but never lawn turf.
No, because I haven't done lawn turf. Maybe we can work out a little deal. I sell some of my clippings. Nathan in Albany. Nathan, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a couple questions, actually. So my first question is regarding iron, because I know that it's a very important nutrient, and I was just wondering what vegetables are best. Because, I know a lot of vegetarians and vegans. I just went vegan, actually, starting in last September. And, I've kind of struggled with my iron intake. So I was wondering what vegetables and other foods are good for your iron level. And my second question is also regarding soy, because there's been a lot of controversy in news and online forums regarding whether or not it raises the estrogen level in men. So I was just wondering if you could possibly answer those two questions for me.
Sure. Let me start with the iron intake issue. A couple good sources of what we call non-heme iron. This is the type of iron we find in plant-based foods. Quinoa. Go get some quinoa. Go get a variety of different legumes and also your dark leafy greens. Spinach isn't really going to count because spinach has a fiber in it that interferes with the absorption of the iron. But there's one other thing you can do that's going to help your body then absorb that iron. If you take, let's say, your beans and your rice and you cook it with something that's rich in vitamin C, okay, how about tomato sauce? How about some bell peppers? The vitamin C that's in the tomatoes and the bell peppers is going to help your body absorb the non-heme iron that's in your beans and in your quinoa.
Okay.
Right. And then on those dark leafy greens, if you think about it, the ones that are really high in iron, like dandelion greens and collard greens, you could almost taste it. Mm-hmm. You could almost taste it. And another thing is to go buy yourself a cast iron Dutch oven, because cooking in cast iron is...
Why?
Iron actually transfers into the food when you cook in there. Cooking in cast iron actually contributes iron to your diet.
It does.
In cast iron skillets and cast iron pots.
Now, in terms of the soy question, actually, I'm not familiar with the scientific literature on soy and raising kind of estrogen levels in the men. Rick?
I've done a lot of research on soy, and there's a lot of mixed comments and ideas on it, but there's some theory out there. The Weston Price Institute talks a lot about this, that if soy is not fermented, it contains high amounts of phytates, and phytates actually pull minerals out of your body, where things like tempeh, miso, once it's fermented, its chemical structure changes, and it becomes much more usable for you than, say, edamame or tofu, which is not fermented. So you can read about that and make your own opinion on it and take your own opinion. But if you're worried about iron and you want to eat soy, from what I've read, you want to go with the fermented soy products are much more beneficial when it comes to minerals, especially tempeh and miso and things like that.
All right. Nathan, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. You know, before we started the show, there was an interesting discussion going on here between Jennifer and Rick. And one thing that kind of caught my ear was sometimes you can get better nutrition out of some vegetables and fruits when you cook them. And that's counterintuitive. You always hear, eat raw, eat the food fresh. Tell me, why?
Well, let me just give you an example. In tomatoes, we know there is a phytonutrient called lutein. Mm-hmm. And lutein, we're actually able to absorb and utilize more of it when it's coming from cooked tomatoes than when it's coming from raw tomatoes. So what you're going to find in the plant world and in terms of nutrition is that sometimes we're going to get larger levels or be able to use more of the nutrients when the food is not cooked. Okay? And sometimes there are nutrients which we're going to better be able to use when the food is cooked. So the bottom line is go for a variety.
Exactly. And I think you used a great word there. we're going to be able to use.
Yes.
I think one of the misconceptions is someone may hold up a raw leaf of kale and say, when this is raw, it has more nutrients than when it's cooked.
Yeah.
But again, it depends on what combination you're eating it with and how you're and whether you're cooking it or not, because it's not what it has when it's raw. It's what your body understands when you eat it. So combining two different things, cooking a green vegetable till it's tender may give you more of a particular mineral but less of a vitamin C. Eating it raw, you may get more vitamin C, but you might not get the minerals because it's more of a roughage. So it all is about variety. You can't just say, I'm going to eat a kale salad every day and be healthy. You have to have a diverse diet. You have to cook some food, eat some food raw, mix and match your vegetables and your nuts and your seeds and your oils, and give your body a chance to, you know, don't forget, our bodies, this vegetarian revolution is relatively new, except that people have been poor for a long time, and many poor people lived on vegetables when they didn't have meat, and they lived okay. Like, the peasants always figure out. They figure out how to survive. There's no one with a handbook. There's no FDA in the 1700s going around Europe saying, you need to eat these vegetables. You need to eat garlic. People figured out who lived and who didn't. It's basic stuff, right? So I think it's important to just, you know, have variety and listen to your instincts as well. When you feel good, you're probably doing the right thing. You don't feel good when you eat Dunkin' Donuts. I don't care what you say.
Well, if you've been stuck on Dunkin' Donuts and you initially cut it out, you might say, I feel horrible. But yes, once you get your body accustomed to eating whole, minimally processed foods, you will feel better. Yeah. But bottom line here is, if the vegetables don't taste good to you, you're not going to keep eating them. So you need to experiment with raw, with fresh, with frozen, and find different ways to prepare them so that it appeals to you.
Yeah.
Jennifer Stack is our guest. Also, Rick Orlando. It is a Food Friday. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Beth in Amherst, you're on.
Hi there. Love the show. Thank you very much for taking the call. I'm starting with this turmeric, and I wondered what you thought about turmeric plus pepper to help one's memory. As a growing older person, I'm starting to take an interest in this issue, as some friends that are my age are having memory issues.
What'd you say?
The other question is this: eat for your type, eat for your blood type. What do you all think about that concept?
Well, that's really a whacked concept, so I wouldn't spend a whole lot of time working on eating for your blood type. Now, there is some science behind the turmeric. However, more of the science has to do with antibacterial properties of it. So I'm not so sure that you're going to see an improvement in your memory by adding that to your diet. It'll make your dishes this beautiful golden yellow. It may do something for your immune system or your health, but I would look to other more strongly proven ways of keeping the brain active and keeping the memory alert than relying on the turmeric to do that.
Although, just to keep the controversy going,
sure.
I'm a big proponent of spices. And in the folklore and in the science and Ayurvedic medicine, and I believe that the more spices in your food, the better. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Turmeric,
mm-hmm.
ginger, garlic, pepper, chilies, cumin, they're all medicinal in some degree. Obviously, you're not going to sit there and eat spoonfuls of turmeric, but bland food versus spiced food, I'm a big proponent of it. I think it's great for your digestion. It's great for your bloodstream, and I'm all for it.
Beth, thank you for the call. We appreciate it very much. You know, I heard an ad on some radio station over the week, and they never said what spice it was. Mm-hmm. It was one of those huckster ads and said, there's a cure for diabetes, blah, 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 common spice found in your kitchen.
Probably cinnamon?
I don't know. They didn't say what it was. But there are spices, Rick, in your estimation, that have healthful benefits.
Well, most of them do to a degree. The question is, you know, how much of it can you eat? But I think having a diet rich in spices can only be beneficial in the long run, because many of them have either blood-thinning qualities. They help. One of the things that when I researched chilies, and I wrote a lot about chilies, is that chilies actually help your stomach excrete digestive juices, which means that you're digesting your food in a more maximum way. And that whole theory of chilies help you get more out of your food, and a lot of the poorest cultures of the world use a lot of chilies in their food. Do they like pain? Did they figure out over generations that chilies may get more out of that head of bok choy if you're eating chilies? They're all ideas to talk about, but the idea that chilies help secrete stomach fluids and help you to digest your food more thoroughly is an interesting thing to think about. You know,
it's interesting to think about. I don't know if it's actually a fact or not, but I want to follow up on something you said, Rick, is, and I agree with you that I want to have a lot of spices in my diet. You can't go wrong with that.
And herbs.
Cook, yeah, cook with a lot of spices. And that's very different than saying, I'm going to take this spice supplement or spice extract. Remember, food and bioactive substances in food, in the quantities we take them in through normal eating, can do good things for us.
Exactly.
But when we isolate out those substances and we take them in super high doses, they start to have more of a drug effect. And drugs can be good and drugs can be bad.
Right. So we're back to the same story, which is integrate your food, eat fresh and eat healthy, and
eat clean.
You'll be okay. You know, yeah, taking herbal supplements that are based on food, it's not a natural way to do things. No human would sit and gnaw on turmeric roots to get enough in there to affect you like that.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Barbara in West Stockbridge. Hi, Barbara, you're on.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a two-part question. What is the nutritional value that's found in wild ramps and leek? Okay. And part two, is this a viable commodity in today's restaurants and vegan diets and things like that? These are wild ramps and leeks that are on our property.
Well, be careful when you harvest your ramps. You know, ramps go back hundreds of years. And when I first started cooking, I had the James Beard cookbook, and I learned about ramps from James Beard, who was a big proponent, because they only came out for a short period of time. And what's happening now is ramps have become so popular that there are lots of people harvesting ramps, and they're taking them all out of the ground. And then they won't come back. Make sure you only take one out of three. But I am not a doctor, but I'm a big proponent of wild food, being a Yul Gibbons fan.
Okay.
I know that wild food inherently grows in dirt full of minerals and nutrients, so eat as much wild food as you can get. I think it can't hurt to eat wild food. You can tell the actual facts.
Yes, Jennifer.
I'm just telling my little
armchair. Time for a fact check with Jennifer Stack.
Eating wild food is always a good idea.
All right.
Well, okay. I have not done a nutrition analysis on wild leeks and ramps, but because they are part of the onion family, they are probably going to be high in two phytonutrients, allium and allicin, which definitely has health-enhancing and disease-preventing properties for our body. I would also venture to say there might be some vitamin C in them, but I wouldn't. I think we should look at them more as a culinary treat that comes up at a special time of the year, rather than a constant source of nutrients.
Now, you know, leeks are a powerful diuretic. And there's that, what's that book
called?
What
an appropriate name then, eh?
Yes. Very good.
How about that?
What was that book of? French Women Don't Get Fat or whatever? The key to that whole book was every day before they started their day, the women would drink leek broth.
Huh.
And
who knew?
They boil their leeks. I think it has to do with the sulfuric compounds, whatever. But it's a really good diuretic. So if you're feeling a little puffy, go with the leeks.
Well, thanks, Rick and Barbara. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Lewis in Albany. Lewis, you're on.
Yes, I just wanted to offer a personal testimony to the benefits of plant-based nutrition. Over about the past year and a half, I switched pretty much over. Completely vegan, and I lost a substantial amount of weight. I was taking off of a blood pressure medicine, a cholesterol medicine. At one point, I was on three different types of diabetic medications. I was taking off of all of those. And it's just, I'm very fortunate because I can't think of a vegetable or a fruit that I do not like. And I like what the gentleman said about finding joy in your shopping and cooking. I really enjoy, I'm not a chef by any means, but I really enjoy cooking my own food. And it's just, I really can't say enough about it because relatively short period of time, like about a year and a half, it had a really positive impact on my overall health, being a type 2 diabetic. And I just wanted to mention, I don't know if it was mentioned earlier, Frances Moore LePay's book, Diet for a Small Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like the Rachel Carson of plant-based nutrition. But I did have a question. I wanted to make sure that I was getting an adequate amount of B12 and having an adequate amount of protein in my diet.
Well, good point about the vitamin B12, because vitamin B12 is only naturally found in animal food. So when you go to a vegan diet and you eliminate all animal sources, typically you get B12 because it's been fortified into something like soy milk or almond milk, or it's in a added to a breakfast cereal or something. If you're not sure if you're getting enough B12, that's something I would check with your doctor and have them do a blood test to make sure that you have adequate levels of B12 and let them know that you follow a vegan diet. And what was the other nutrient you were just asking about, Lewis?
About making sure that I have an adequate amount of protein in my diet, because I do a little bit of dairy, I have to be honest. I mean, you can't have a good cappuccino without a little bit of milk in it, but... I can't say enough about this plant-based nutrition. I don't know what took me so long, but I had such a positive impact on my health doing that. I mean, taking off of 5 different kinds of medicines and losing a substantial amount of weight.
And Lewis, what you're saying about this health benefit is absolutely correct.
And it's in
your book. Yes, if somebody has multiple health problems, from high blood pressure to diabetes to high cholesterol levels, without a doubt, you're going to see benefit on a vegan diet. But here's the hitch. Not everyone can live a vegan lifestyle and diet. And what if you can't? What if you really, like you said, I want the milk in my cappuccino.
Yeah.
You can get health benefits even if you're not 100% vegan.
Right.
Just start with one day a week, one meal a week, getting rid of the animal products and expose yourself to more of the grains, the nuts and seeds, the vegetables and the beans. And you can start to see some of those health benefits.
And don't you think a lot of us do without even planning it or knowing it? How many times do you have a bowl of pasta fazzoletti for dinner or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just something that, as an Italian-American, I realize as I was learning about diets 30 years later, growing up, at least a third of the time we had meatless. I might have put some Romano cheese on it because I'm that way. But, you know, we had vegetarian and vegan meals all the time, you know. That was just the way you ate.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday. Jennifer Stack is here, Rick Orlando, and more of your calls coming up, 800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Snow Farm Williamsburg, a New England craft program offering creative arts workshops taught by master craftspeople for adults and teens, beginners and up, snowfarm.org. Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs, cafecapriccio.com for reservations. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, presenting The Winter Hoot, a festival for children and adults with 15 bands, local foods, crafts and activities for kids and more, February 7th through 9th, ashokancenter.org. And Adirondack Folk School, Lake Luzerne, New York, dedicated to teaching the arts, crafts, and culture of the Adirondack region, adirondackfolkschool.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. That's Peelin' Taters by guitarist Junior Brown. That's why we put that little... Peelin'
nice
Taters.
Pick.
Yeah, he's always good. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rick Orlando.
Need a little
here.
Green onions to follow that up.
You know, that would have been a great idea. I didn't think of that. Jennifer Stack from the Culinary Institute of America also here. And your calls. Let's go to Lena in Great Barrington.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question about, I've been a vegan and a vegetarian off and on for many years. And my cholesterol has dropped, just to echo what our previous caller had. What I'm interested in hearing from you is how to make a vegan gravy for any number of things. Some people want to pretend they're eating meat. And how do we get that rich, hearty flavor into a gravy when we're serving seitan?
Okay, well, I can jump in on this right now. Our Thanksgiving at New World Home Cooking is quite a phenomenal success in the Hudson Valley. We do a big buffet, and we make turkey and but we also make vegan dishes. We make a vegan seitan roast, and I developed a gravy recipe using red miso, and red miso is dark and almost meaty flavored. And We basically make a really rich red miso broth and then turn it into a gravy. You can use flour or you can use any other type of starch, potato starch, whatever, to thicken it. But red miso is going to give your vegetable broth that rich, meaty flavor that you're looking for. It's that simple. It's really good.
I would even add in on that one, a veggie gravy, you're going to start with some sort of vegetable broth, a roasted vegetable broth, or better yet, like a mushroom broth, particularly if you've used some dried, rehydrated mushrooms, is going to add in that umami quality, that savory quality, just like we'd be getting from the miso.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Lena, thank you. Let's go to Edward in Lake Katrine. Hi, Edward. You're on.
Hi. First of all, I'm thankful that we live in an area where we can support Catskill Animal Sanctuary, and they provide a lot of resources about how to make meals vegetarian, and certainly they want to save their critters that they support and protect. So I'm glad to be a part of that. But I'd like to ask a global question.
All right.
Given global population increase, given climate change, given many fishing grounds have been fished out, given many animals are heading toward extinction, shouldn't we be thinking about long range, what we do for the planet, not just what we do for ourselves? And what would you recommend as far as a global diet is?
Okay.
Well, Edward, that is happening as we speak, that people are becoming much more aware of how when we focus our meals around plants, around vegetables, instead of a meat-based diet, we absolutely are going to help the environment, help the planet. And if we think about a lot of very old cultures and cuisines throughout the world, many of them have fabulous long-standing recipes and combinations for vegan meals. So if somebody is looking for a plant-based recipe idea, go look at some of those cultures and cuisines of the world where they, for many centuries, have cooked without meats, and you're going to find some delicious ways that you can help save the planet.
I want to just chime in on that a little bit. I think that if you're really worried about the long-term health of the planet, my best advice is to avoid any factory-farmed anything.
Mm. Yeah.
Because factory-farmed vegetables are absolutely as detrimental as factory-farmed meats. They are destroying acres and acres and acres to grow everything from cows to soybeans. Maybe soybeans to feed the cow or soybeans to feed you. I think small farms and smaller production will be more sustainable in the long run. But anything that you're going for, whether you're a vegetarian or a carnivore, that's a factory-farm product, is going to have immense detriments on the environment. So I think small, and if we all think small and decentralized, you will take a lot of the pressure off the environment. But centralized agriculture, whether it's meat or vegetables, is all destroying the environment.
On this Food Friday, we're joined by Rick Orlando and Jennifer Stack, and your calls at 800-348-2551. Lawrence in Red Hook, you're up.
Yes, I remember you used to eat nuts in Central Park. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Gibbon died of, how he died.
He died. I remember that he died.
Well, he died of stomach cancer from eating all those nuts in Central Park.
Well, maybe. I mean, possibly. I mean, anybody want to chime in on that? On the death of Yul Gibbons 25 years ago?
I wasn't there at the autopsy, so I'm afraid I really don't know enough about his cause of death. Could have been any number of things, from nuts to whatever was on them.
Could have been his bourbon.
Could
have been his bourbon.
Made a lot of dandelion wine, you
But enough about Yul Gibbons. Let's move on, and let's go over to Lynn in Ware. Hello, Lynn. Lynn, are you there?
Where is Lynn?
Lynn, that's funny. Lynn, are you there? Okay, Lynn is not there. Let's go to Nathan in Ludlow. Hi, Nathan, you're up.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I've got a quick question. I'm a meat and potatoes type of guy. My wife can do meat like once a week, and I was looking if you have any suggestions. I feel like vegetarian dishes just don't stick with me.
Our guests have some answers for you.
Oh, excellent.
Buckle up. Here we go.
All right. I'm going to start with one. Now, my husband is a meat and potato guy also. He's got the worst diet in the world. And so.
And you let him?
25 years, and I can't
apparently,
change
no
the
impact,
man.
Apparently, no impact, huh?
No
wow.
impact whatsoever. So anyways, as I'm writing and developing the recipes for my book, I wanted to try out some of the vegetarian ones. And one of them is seitan satays with a tahini soy dressing.
Okay.
So I invite a lot of people over. We're going to taste the recipes. Everyone give their opinion. And so finally, at the end, I asked my husband, John, what was your favorite dish? And he says, oh, I really liked that chicken dish.
There you
I'm
go.
Like, really? Now, there's no chicken here. Mm-hmm. So which one? Can you point it out to me? And it was the seitan satay with tahini soy dressing. And I have to say, if you are looking for a meat substitute that has the chew and texture of meat, seitan is the way to go. Even more so, I'm going to say, than extra firm tofu. That would be the next one in line. But the other way I find that you can make these meat substitutes meaty-like, texture-wise, is take an extra firm tofu and make sure you press it between paper towels with maybe like a heavy pot on top of it. And that's going to press out a lot of the extra liquid so that it's firm enough that I like to grill it. And that's one of the other recipes I got in my book was I grill slices of this marinated pressed tofu and I alternate it with slices of grilled eggplant and then I top it with basically like a tomato and bell pepper sauce. And it's my
Sounds
husband
great.
Will eat
Does
that
sound good.
Too.
Really?
Now,
yes.
I have a little suggestion, which is kind of interesting, but I've become a big proponent of vegetables, but texturally like meat, which I'm talking denser cuts of vegetables. For
okay.
instance, we'll take rutabagas at the restaurant and cut them an inch and a half thick and steam them until they're just starting to get tender and then actually barbecue them. Put them on the grill with like a barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
You can do that with sweet potatoes. You can do that with butternut squash, but not little diced and not little thin pieces. Thick slabs.
So you get some substance. Some
it's heft. You know, I think one of the things that carnivores crave is that density of food. It's a denser feeling
yes.
in your gut. And when you take again, root vegetables work great. Rutabagas, celeriac, but cut about an inch thick. Just put it in a steamer until it's just tender enough to poke a toothpick in, not fully soft, and then treat it like barbecue. Put some kind of barbecue glaze on it and put it under the broiler. And when you're eating it, your body says, oh, I'm eating something. I'm eating a steak. I'm eating a vegetable steak, but I'm eating a steak. Yeah. But larger pieces, sometimes I'll just peel and roast whole parsnips and carrots, the same thing. And when you cut them with the steak knife and eat them, your brain is like, you think you're eating a piece of meat.
What do you
it
think, Nathan?
It works great with cauliflower, too.
Yeah, cauliflower is great that way.
Big old thick hunk of cauliflower.
You buying that?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it sounds really good.
I'm hungry. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah,
thanks
trick
a lot.
Your brain, son. Trick your brain.
David in Bolton, you're up. David.
Hi. I have read a number of articles recently, well, a few articles recently, about olive oil. And these articles are stating that about 60% of the olive oil imported into the U.S. is diluted with oil other than olive oil, like canola oil or something like that. So when I'm in a supermarket or any market, how do I know what olive oil, when it says extra virgin olive oil, is really extra virgin olive oil?
Well, I'm going to go first on this, but we'll both take turns. There has been some controversy on that. You can buy, I think you get what you pay for, first of all. There are some beautiful olive oils that are more expensive and organic, and they'll say organic, and they will say product of Italy, grown in Italy. They'll have a story of the farm on the back, where it comes from, or product of Spain as opposed to packed in Italy or packed in Spain. And there's also, right now, some of the California olive oils are absolutely spectacular and much more closely regulated on our end. That's what we use in our restaurant exclusively is Corto California olive oil, and it's just perfect. And the other advice I have to give you is, you know, olive oil is very volatile, so it should always be in either a can or a dark bottle or a bottle wrapped. Like we use Ranieri olive oil.
Now, when you say volatile, it gets rancid?
It's exposed to any type of light, fluorescent or sunlight, and those omega-3s begin to get diminished instantly because the sun is diminished. So you want, even though it looks beautiful in the green bottle, no, get, you know, a tin or a sealed paper sealed bottle, But check out some of the California olive oils. Boy, they're really good. And you can probably find them at Whole Foods or better stores like that. I'm not sure if they're in regular supermarkets.
Oh, I got a great one from Hannaford's here.
Really?
Yeah. That it's all California olives, and I feel good because I guess it's kind of local.
Yeah.
So for when it comes to oil.
So domestic, there are tighter controls than domestically. So if it says it is what it is.
I don't know for sure about that.
Depends on who the lobbying body is. Let's get Alan in here on that one.
I would also add though, just. You know, a really good olive oil tastes like olive oil, and they've got its own unique flavor. And if you're bringing home an oil and you're tasting it and it just doesn't have that olive kick, well, maybe it was diluted.
Yes, I've read that the Greeks were the strictest on olive oil for a long time, but I don't know what's happened in the last few years with all the economic issues in the EU.
I don't know.
It may have put some pressure. But in the old days, the word was that the Greeks were practically growing organically and their olive oils were the cleanest.
David, great call. Thanks very much. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Hey, let's go to Kelly in Albany. Kelly, you're on.
Hi. I had three more suggestions to a previous caller's question about how to make proteins that are more appealing to carnivores. One is tempeh. That's very easy, and I find it's best if you steam it first and then fry it or whatever you're going to do with it. And the other are with tofu. The other two suggestions are for tofu. One is if you freeze it first and then thaw it and squeeze a lot of that water out, you have a spongier consistency, and that can soak up a lot more marinade.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you slice it and bake it, it gets to be a nice, really dense consistency. And you can, you know, poke it beforehand and, you know, get a lot more of a marinade flavor in there. Or I especially use that for making fried rice. So I'll toss it with some tamari, and then once it's baked, cut it up and fry it, and it has just a much denser, meatier texture.
Absolutely, yeah, concentrated.
And you've made a really good point, Kelly, that tofu is a very neutral-tasting substance. So just by itself, it's going to be like, it doesn't have any flavor. So marinating helps to create the flavor profile that you want and really is an important step.
Yeah, tofu, I had a chapter in my book called We Hate Tofu, and it was a bunch of tofu recipes. And I said, you know, you can't hate tofu. You could be indifferent to tofu, but tofu is that kid in the corner of the room that never spoke, didn't play any games. It's a neutral thing. But tofu, it can be very delicious. I like to remind people that all tofu is really is a form of fresh mozzarella without the milky flavor. It's just a very neutral.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So, you know, if you think of it that way.
But I've heard you say you're not big on tofurkey.
I'm not big on processed anything is my thing. I don't believe in processed food. I don't care if it's vegan or meat. Once you process it, you've done things and I'm not there. I'd rather process it myself. I do love tempeh. I have great recipes in our book for tofu moussaka and tofu bolognese because you can get that ground meat kind of experience from eating tempeh if you crumble it and brown it up a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't like processed food. I tell people to avoid processed food, period.
Kelly, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Let's go to Yakov in Newburg. You're on.
Hi, thank you. I'm a meat eater, and I'm very, very concerned about the meat that I buy and how I cook it, but I love vegetables. As a matter of fact, I'm just cooking a potato leek soup and roasting parsnips and turnips.
Yum.
But I think part of the fear that people have about vegetarianism, much less veganism, is that Americans, and you mentioned this a little earlier, saying that shopping in this country is a chore. It's not a joy. It's not going out every day as they do in Italy or in France. And I think that Americans have lost that sense. I think that they're afraid of it because they've lost the whole tradition of the conviviality of food, of sharing of food, of taking time to shop, of preparing, and people to share it with. We're a culture of, you know, instant takeout. It's quick. It's easy. The kids are at soccer. The husband's watching some football game. And so I think this has really, really very seriously and detrimentally impacted the way Americans eat. I don't think it's so much a question of being vegetarian or vegan. I think it's our attitude toward food, how we prepare it, if we have a tradition from our family of how these things were prepared.
Yakov, I want to ask you a question before you go any further. You live in the Hudson Valley, correct?
I live in the city of Newburgh.
Okay. Have you seen in the last 5 years the phenomenal growth of farmers markets in the Hudson Valley? Every town has a farmer's market.
Absolutely, yes.
See, so I feel as though what you're saying is true, but that we're going in the right direction. I have three children, 26, 25, and 20. I learn a lot from their behavior, and they all shop at farmer's markets all the time. There's a new generation coming up that is adapting that old world mentality. The farmer's market is really vibrant. And if you go to a farmer's market, it's a lot of young people shopping in the farmer's market. So though what you say is correct, I feel as though we've really taken a turn, not just in New York, all over the country, going in a better direction. Of course, we're not all there yet, but the phenomenon of the farmer's market in this area really is really just encouraging to me to see how many people are out. Hipsters, seniors, they're all together at the farmer's market. They're listening to music. They're buying prepared food. They're buying vegetables. It's a great scene. It's a Troy farmer's market is like one of the most happening scenes in upstate New York on a Saturday morning. You know, it's a cool place to
And
be.
They have them everywhere.
Yeah.
In your town, you probably have one.
So there's hope, baby. There's hope.
All right. Jennifer, last word.
Last word. I'm agreeing with Rick on this one. There's hope. We're moving in the right direction, and we just got to vote with our fork, and that means go out there and make choices that support the kind of agriculture, the kind of food, the kind of environment that you want.
Well, this was a fun show. Thanks to Jennifer Stack of the Culinary Institute and Rick Orlando of New World Home Cooking. We'll have you both back again soon, and thanks to everybody who called in. We appreciate it. You can find out much more on our website, wamc.org. If you want to just plug in Food Friday in the search box there. You'll find all sorts of stuff related to this program, or go to the Vox Pop page. There's a jumping off point there as well. Thanks to Jennifer Stack and Rick Orlando for being with us. Thanks to you for calling. Thanks to Zach, the intrepid engineer. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls today. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for joining us today. Now, next week, we will not have Vox Pop. We will be here for a fun drive, and we hope that you join us and do the right thing, and we'll be back to regular programming before you know it. Stay tuned now for a news update.